Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of July 9th, 2019. And this is episode number 399. Kind of the last of an era here, the last of the 300s. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live right here on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And as pointed out in the chat room, yes, I am missing the baseball all-star game that's taking place tonight, literally 20 miles from my home where I'm sitting right now. I don't have tickets anyway, so I could not afford. I think the cheapest I could find was $250 standing room only. So a little bit too rich for my blood, but I don't know. I can watch it on TV, so it doesn't matter. Got late minute offer for tickets last night for the Home Run Derby at a really good deal at $275, I think, for standing room only. So I could have got seats for that one earlier for $350, but I'll watch it on TV. I'm paying enough for that for cable anyway. So I'll just watch it like everyone else, even though it's right down the road. But it's kind of cool watching something like that on TV because I've been in that stadium so many times. I've actually been on the field, and hopefully soon I'll be able to actually play on that field in the next couple of weeks. As part of the fantasy camp adventure I had earlier this year with the Cleveland Indians. So, yeah, I'm a little bit of a baseball fan here tonight. So, well, every night, but tonight is the All-Star game. So good luck to the American League. We'll see what they can do. Granted, it doesn't matter who wins this. It's all for show anymore. It doesn't mean anything. Just to sell some cars, I guess. But anyway, we got some news in the pipeline for you tonight. A lot of crazy, zany, weird, strange stuff. And some of the stuff I'm kind of putting on the back burner because of all of this UFO stuff coming down. But tonight, we're going to talk about the Patterson-Gimlin film. We've got some new information that has just surfaced. You're gonna like this. We're also going to talk Roswell. I know there's still a lot of UFO stuff. Yes, Roswell is finally solved, and you're going to find out how it's solved tonight. These are all called teasers, folks, in the business. We tell you things that are just crazy, zany, and you're like, whoa, is this for real? I'm going to tune into this show tonight. I'm not going anywhere. UFOs over Texas, that one might be solved, and this is probably my favorite one of the weekend. I got a really good kick out of this, and I'm actually getting a little nervous now. I think this is taking off. A social media group plans on forcing disclosure this fall. And that's a really interesting story. And one that's not really too happy about, but we're going to kind of tackle here tonight. MUFON dives into conspiracy theories pretty much head first. I'm not really happy about that, but we're going to cover all that and maybe a little bit more here tonight on the Paranormal News Insider. Again, right here live on ParanormalKing.com. And you can join in the chat room as well and hang out and ask questions and find out what's going on. You know, if you have any questions about the news, and we can dig deeper. I mean, I try to dig pretty far. I get my shovel out every week on these stories, and I dig as deep as I can to find the truth, because that's what I do. I don't just cover a headline and read a few lines and give you an opinion about it. I really dig into these stories, and I have a background in all of these fields as a researcher, a UFO researcher. I've studied with MUFON, cryptozoology. I've actually written a book in every field, pretty much, and a long time as a ghost researcher as well. Speaking of being a ghost researcher, I know it's a stretch for anybody listening to the show. Maybe there's a few of you out there. Maybe some of those people that are listening far, far away in some of the amazing countries that I've uncovered. I've looked at some statistics, and it's amazing where people are listening to the show from. Just some really interesting areas, and I'm really happy for that. I'm really happy to hear people listening from Russia, United Kingdom, gosh, I can't remember all these just countries I never would think would be listening to this show, the Paranormal News Insider, based here in Northeast Ohio. But wow, I mean, just people from everywhere. You know, I do have some friends from Australia, so I kind of get that. But just amazing the types of places that people are listening to this show from. And, you know, I really, really appreciate it. People from New Zealand, Puerto Rico, United Kingdom, Norway, Germany, Canada. Well, of course, Canada, but just everywhere. And it's to me, it's just it's amazing. And even if I look, I'm going to look real quick. I got a second. What was the one I was really amazed by? Netherlands, Sweden, Ireland. The Irish love this stuff. Japan, even. Really surprised by that. Denmark, Spain, Mexico, New Zealand, Vietnam, Colombia, Norway, Thailand, Mozambique, Poland, Brazil, Costa Rica, France. I mean, just all over the world. It's just amazing, all these countries. And this is a global show, folks. Global. So I'm excited to bring it to you. No, I don't know if there is. Is there Middle East? I don't know. I'd have to look here. Probably down the list there. Well, Iran. Got one listener from Iran in the last few months. Ukraine, South Africa, Peru, Cambodia. So see Israel, Iran. And that's pretty much all I see from that area. Pretty much it from the Middle East. Well, I guess, you know, I got to work on that, the Middle Eastern stuff. Maybe talk about some different things. I don't know what's out there, paranormal speaking, but maybe I'll find something. But anyway, talking about experience and not sure how many people are really into the skeptical side of things, but I really think that if you're in the paranormal at all, if you're going to be a researcher, you're going to be an investigator into strange, unknown things, whether it's ghosts, whether it's UFOs, cryptozoology, any of these things, I think you really owe it to yourself to look at the skeptical side, to really bring about a balance in your research. It's really, really easy to go out there and read a bunch of books that side with your personal belief systems. It's easy. We all do it. You know, we're all guilty of these things. We want to prove somebody wrong, so we Google something and we, you know, use those keywords in our direction to make it, you know, go with what our opinions are. But I really, really, really stress this to a lot of people that, you know, when people ask me for advice on becoming a better researcher and investigator, look at the skeptical side and just don't glance at it. Read this stuff, dig into it and see what their complaints are about the paranormal field. Read about what their solutions are for the way we're doing things wrong. It will really help you out. And there's a lot of researchers out there that are skeptics that want to actually help us. It's not that they want to prove us wrong. They just want to get us going in the right direction, because the really good skeptics, they don't really have that agenda. You know, we all think that they all have an agenda, and it doesn't matter what we can provide. They're just going to say, that's not real anyway. Well, I mean, there are a few of them out there that are like that, but I think in general, there's a lot of really, really good ones out there. And one of my personal favorite skeptics is Benjamin Radford. And if you remember a couple of weeks ago, I did mention that I wrote a review for Benjamin Radford's book, Investigating Ghosts, The Scientific Search for Spirits. This actually came out in 2018, and it kind of piggybacks on his other book, Scientific Paranormal Investigation. I'm trying to remember the subtitle to that, How to Solve Unexplained Mysteries, I believe it is. That was a really good book, but it was, you know, all fields. And he's been involved in all three fields for a long, long time. A long time. And but this one here, Investigating Ghosts, obviously, is focused on ghosts. And it does a really good job of not just telling people what they're doing wrong, but actually kind of giving you an understanding of what we're doing wrong and why. And so then hopefully those in the ghost field can kind of move in a different direction or really try to capitalize on this and go in a different direction, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, there's no right or wrong way to investigate the paranormal. Well, that's completely false. There's plenty of wrong ways to do that. And this book really points out a lot, but it's not like it's hitting you over the head and saying you're doing this wrong, you're bad, you're silly, you guys are clueless. I mean, at times it kind of does, but it's necessary. I don't think he goes over the top. He does a fantastic job. But anyway, I did write a 2-page spread on this in the July-August edition of Skeptical Inquirer magazine. I do recommend, just go out there and pick up this magazine, but pick it up and buy it. There's actually a lot of really good articles in this particular thing other than my book review, but it's good. It's good for you to experience that. I'm not saying run out and get a subscription. Just this magazine, just to kind of get your feet wet, just to say, hey, look, I'm smart. I'm intelligent. I'm looking at the other side, not just the paranormal side. So do check it out. I think it's a very fair review. And, you know, I've had my books reviewed in there, so I'm always nervous about that. But obviously, a skeptic getting a skeptical book reviewed in a skeptical magazine is not a big deal. But a believer, I don't really call myself a believer. I want to believe, say I'm a true believer. You know, an actual ghost researcher reading this, giving input, I think was fantastic. And unfortunately, you can look up Skeptical Inquirer, and there's some of these articles are available online. I don't know why, but my article is not available for free unless you're a subscriber. So you do have to go and get the magazine. Unfortunately, I think you can go, Benjamin Radford posted, Kenny Biddle posted a picture of it. So either one of them, I forget which one, but I think they both posted a picture. You can kind of sneak peek and read a little bit of it, to be honest, on Facebook. But I'm pretty proud of that, to get an article written in a skeptical magazine about that book. So I'm excited about that. Anyway, let's move into the news. And we're going to talk cryptid news out of the gate. Let's get this stuff out of the way. You guys want to hear about UFO stuff, I know. But cryptid news this week, kind of a big deal, I think. And this is the first time that we've talked about this particular piece of history, and I call it history. Yes, it's the Patterson-Gimlin film, and it is the most famous piece of evidence pertaining to Bigfoot I ever collected. And I think when you look at all the paranormal fields, I think this is it. I think this is the biggest piece. But it's kind of weird because, yeah, it's not exactly clear. It's a little blurry. I mean, the technology back in 1967, isn't as good as now. You know, people make fun of people with their potato cameras nowadays, but you look at this footage, shot from, he was getting off a horse and running toward this Bigfoot who was walking away and trying to film this with a very large, clunky, heavy camera over his shoulder. I don't think he did too bad of a job. If you watch the original film, you generally have to strap yourself in and you get motion sickness. The camera bounces all over the place, and it's really hard to focus on the creature walking away. The film was shot, again, 1967, on October 20th, along Bluff Creek in Northwest California, and it contains 59.5 seconds of what is thought to be, yes, a Bigfoot. And many feel it's a female Bigfoot, and there's pretty good reasons why, walking away from the two men who were attempting to film it. And really and truly, when you're looking at this, there's no misinterpretation as to what you're seeing. It's not a tree stump. It's not a person in a hoodie. This is either, it's not a bear either. This is either a legitimate Bigfoot or a person in a suit. There's no CGI. There's nothing else. It's either one or the other. And I think that's what's made this really, despite it being the best potential evidence, it's also the biggest piece of potential fraud out there as well. So yeah, there was no CGI back in 1967, but the validity of the film has been argued ever since it was made public, and it continues to this day. People have knockout, drag-out fights over this film. Many people are very quick to believe it. Others dismiss it wholeheartedly, saying it's a hoax. It's not real. And even experts, there's a lot of experts in various fields, not saying paranormal experts, but experts in film, in costume design, even from that era, have taken sides. You know, some people say it's got to be real. We didn't have the technology back then. There's no way a creature could look like that in reality in that time frame. Other people say, no, that's completely fake. It's a hoax. And really and truly, there's facts that point in both directions. You know, we could talk about Roger Patterson wanting to film a Bigfoot, do a Bigfoot movie. That's what he set out to do. He goes out in the woods and he does it in his first try. I mean, I've known investigators, researchers have been going out for years and years and years. I've never seen or heard anything. I mean, it's just kind of convenient. And all the allegations that a suit was made. Granted, that goes against what was thought to be available at the time, the technology, even though they were working on a series of movies about those darn dirty apes that were taking over planet Earth. You know that one. You know that movie. But anyway, the debate rages on. And what's interesting to note, too, if you know anything about the Patterson-Gimlin film, the original film itself, as well as the first couple initial copies, are actually gone. They're destroyed. They're lost. Nobody knows where they're at. They're missing, presumed lost, more than likely deteriorated, even if they were found at this point. If they haven't, if they weren't locked away somewhere and kept out of moisture and away from static electricity and all these other things that can deteriorate film. And occasionally there are some digital updates to the film that help us see it better. Over the years, we've seen image stabilization and other techniques that have helped us get a new look at this film. And it's kind of funny because I've shown the original film at libraries and people are like stunned. They're like, this isn't what I remember of this film. I thought the Bigfoot was, you know, not moving around that much. I'm like, no, this is the original film. This is what this is what they saw up until about the middle, late 1990s, the early 2000s, when we were able to clean this film up and slow it down, image stabilization kind of things, and make it easily readable to see. And again, we've seen a lot of different things over the years. And, you know, what's really unfortunate is this Patterson-Gimlin film is, it's really served to be kind of the cookie cutter method of how people are hoaxing. And they're using people walking away from the camera, looking over their shoulder or walking one direction or the other through the woods, wearing hoodies, like I'd mentioned before, or just trying to fool the camera. And it's unfortunate. You know, kind of degrading this film. And it's pretty sad. But anyway, the YouTube channel Bigfoot Al, released a 4K remaster of the film back on July 1st. And just like each time an update is made, I'm always impressed if they do a pretty good job. And he did a fantastic job. He spent a considerable amount of time enhancing each individual frame with image stabilization as well as color enhancement, along with rendering it to a higher definition. And in his 27-plus minute video, Bigfoot Al described just how he completed his project. And he did a really fantastic job, not just with putting together this each frame to bring us this 4K and to bring it up to snuff, but also explaining how he did it, which, you know, there's been some people I've seen jump on him and say, you know, you're altering each frame, you're changing it, but really he's not. He's just trying to bring more definition into it, and anything he did really didn't alter anything of what we're seeing. We're not changing what this creature looked like, just kind of enhancing what was already there. So, you know, I have no problem with the work that was done with this new 4K remaster of the Patterson-Gimlin film. I think it's tremendous. And when I first saw it, actually before I saw it, and I do, this is like a tradition because this is probably the 10th time that there's been a new release of the Patterson-Gimlin film, I always go back and I find an original cut of the 59 and a half seconds. And I forced myself to watch it. Again, you have to hold on to the desk because the camera's jumping all over the place. It's hard to spot where this creature is. And it's just amazing how much technology can change it. So I watched the original. I think it was from the History Channel. Had the History logo there on the lower right-hand corner. And then I watched this one. I was really amazed at how clear and stable. Granted, you know, they've had stabilization for a while, but it was just amazing to see this. And there is a lot more detail that you can see. That was a little bit of speculation years and years ago. He claims that he's seen things that nobody else has, but I'm pretty sure everything he's mentioned has already been talked about this film. But you do see it with a little bit more clarity, which is the important thing here. And I think I said this last time, but this is probably going to be it. I mean, you can see the restraints, or I should say the limitations, even of this 4K technology, and even of what he did with different programs that did the best they could with what we have to deal with. And I will say it again this time, that this update to the film is probably as good as you're ever going to see it ever. I don't think we'll ever see a clear image of this unless the original film is ever discovered and it's able to be converted to high definition directly from that film. I don't think there's any way you're ever going to see it any clearer or any better than what you're seeing from Bigfoot Al right now. Maybe a little bit cleaner or clearer, but really and truly right now, this is the best I've seen it. I don't think you're going to get too better with this technology at this point. And I mean, the old technology, he does comment that he says that the footage is actually pretty good for its era. And I guess that's true, especially for the age and how many times it's been copied. Because the more you copy it, it does lose its luster. And it's still worth seeing it, you know, no matter what. And highly recommend, again, watch the original version first. And I have links to both of those that I'll throw out in social media throughout the week. And again, by social media, you can find me on Facebook. So Facebook.com/ParaNewsInsider, and also on Twitter @ParaNewsInsider. And both of those are intertwined. So if you're on one or the other, which not everybody likes one or the other, and you can get the links to all these stories. And I put them out starting pretty much tomorrow, because tonight I'll be uploading the show. So a link for that will pop up. And then throughout the week, I'll be putting out these stories pretty much in the order in which I cover them generally. Sometimes I mix them up. I like to mix them up sometimes. I think that's fun. But I don't think they made much or if any money off the Patterson-Gimlin film. It was a little... It's kind of interesting. Gimlin kind of got left on the outside. He didn't want anything to do with it. He wasn't making any money from it. Supposed to get a percentage, didn't get anything. So he just kind of didn't want anything to do with it. And then she had to take Patterson to court. So long, twisted story. But, you know, they both swear that it was not a hoax. They both swear it was not a... person in a costume. And you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about, you know, Patterson did this behind Gimlin's back and all these other things, but Gimlin was actually a skeptic about this whole thing, so it's interesting that he believes that this was the real deal. But anyway, long twisted story, and it's just weird that we're still talking about this film from 1967, and it's sad too. And it's, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, Bigfoot has to be real because of all the reports coming out, of all this evidence. But I say, what evidence? You know, all we really, the major piece we have is this old film from 1967. If in fact, you know, there was more evidence, we'd see something a little bit more clear than this, than what we're seeing with this Patterson-Gimlin film. I mean, somebody would have had to have gotten a little bit closer than these little fuzzy outline shapes that people circle, that are so pixelated that you can't tell what it's probably just a shadow or a stump. And people, oh no, that's Bigfoot. That's Bigfoot right there. No, it's a shadow. It's pareidolia, or it's a stump. Stop fooling ourselves. But anyway, a lot of people claim they see it, but Where's the proof? Where's the proof? And eventually, hopefully, we'll get more proof. And, you know, not that I want to see one of these get killed, but even Patterson and Gimlin both admitted that they, you know, Gimlin said, I'll only go into this if we don't shoot it. But he kind of retracted that years later from all the trouble going back and forth with this, people not believing in them and saying that they're lying and saying they're fabricating this and hoaxing it. Gimlin actually said, gosh, you know what? I wish you'd have just blown the thing away. Then all this would be, we wouldn't have to talk about this. I mean, you know, my thought is Harry and the Hendersons, somebody's eventually going to hit something. And that's what happens to deer. That's what happens to mountain lions. Happens to elk. It happens to every animal out there. They eventually get hit. And that's our proof that they're in certain areas. Unfortunately, it happens. You know, mountain lion traveled 1,500 miles across the United States, the Black Hills of South Dakota, and got struck just north of New York City. Couldn't make it. Wanted to go shopping at Bloomingdale's. Didn't have the time. Couldn't make it. Should have got an Uber to get across that freeway, I guess. Anyway, that's your cryptid news. We're going to jump into UFO news. Of course, lots of stuff in the UFO arena in the last few months. It's the year of the UFO. I swear, 2019 is pretty much 90% UFO stories right now, and it's getting a little out of hand. It's getting a little out of control, but producer and I were talking before the show. It is kind of slowing down a little bit, coming out of the National UFO Day last week, or really, for me, it was the June 24th, but that's a different story. But I think it is kind of slowing down. The political news reel is moving in a different direction. I think UFOs are going to get left behind a little bit here for a while. That is until the To the Stars Academy starts to need a little bit more money, and then maybe they'll start talking about it again. Anyway, a UFO sighting in Killeen, Texas, back on June 13th, might have been solved. It's now a IFO, potentially. Numerous reports flooded in on the 13th of June of a UFO flying near Fort Hood. A person was getting their mail when they noticed a flickering object in the sky and began to take a video. And they got a still frame of that video that I'll throw in the chat room there. So if you're in the chat room listening live, you get a little bit of a sneak peek of some of these stories, some things that are in the news that, you know, if I have any photographs or anything that I can show you. So there's a picture, and it says, what is that thing? It's a little shiny. You can see the glint off of it, and some of you can probably already tell what that thing is. I don't know why people were thinking that was anything else other than what it probably is. Other photos and videos of a shiny, unidentified flying object also accompanied the sighting that ended up in the hands of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, who was said to being investigating this case. Lasted on the news probably 24 hours before it got buried by other stories, as is the case with a lot of these UFO stories. And it kind of faded away, and it wasn't really anything that was nationwide, so I didn't even cover it. I remember the story. I got one little story from a local station, so I didn't even bother covering it. And you know, frankly, I saw the pictures and I kind of already had an idea, so it wasn't worth it to me. After a couple of weeks of speculation and no answers, a family has stepped forward with a possible solution to the case. Anthony Ortiz told ABC 13 Eyewitness News that his family was in Killeen hosting a family vigil for his grandfather that recently passed away. The family had released about 50 to 60 balloons that were tied together, which may have been what was seen in the skies above Killeen. I mean, you look at this picture and other pictures that were accompanied this story, and it's pretty much the most plausible answer to this case overall. But so far, interestingly enough, MUFON has been mute on this case. They've not mentioned it or talked about anything. They've been asked by a couple of different news agencies in Texas, and MUFON has not commented on the case. And really and truly, not a good idea. I mean, to me, it looks like, it does look like balloons. Looks like at least a few. It doesn't look like 50, but you don't know really how high up that is or how far away that is. I mean, it could be a bunch of balloons, but it does look like balloons. Doesn't quite look like a UFO to me. But yeah, MUFON has not said anything. I mean, guys, it's a missed opportunity. And they've been screwing up a lot lately. We're going to have another story where they really, really, really messed up. But probably my favorite story of the week, and this is gaining speed, it's getting momentum. My favorite story of the week, it's a little less serious UFO story, and one that I would probably sidestep and barely mention. It's kind of a dare I say, dangerous. So I wouldn't want to get this going, but it's already going. Nothing I can do about it. This one is so out there, no pun intended, that I just had to talk about it. Not to mention, it seems to be getting a lot of attention in the last few days as the movement is growing. There's been a lot of focus on UFOs, obviously, like I mentioned, the last few weeks and probably months. And many others are starting to join the ranks and wondering just what the government might know about UFOs and extraterrestrials. So it's beyond all of us nutty people that are into UFOs. People wanting to protest and ask questions and get government to release forms and what else they can to appease us with our answers, or I should say our questions. And, you know, now, like, Joe Public is really getting involved in this stuff. And the story starts out on, well, where else but Facebook. I mean, social media, come on. Social media where solid ideas are always formed on foundations of sanity. I mean, it's proven. Everything that comes out of Facebook is well thought out, well planned, well executed, and very intelligent. All right, so I'm just kidding about that. Someone created a group called, quote, Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us, unquote. That's the actual group name, and now they have an event page. And the plan is to gather as many people as possible and actually physically raid the base in Nevada and go in search of aliens, UFOs, whatever they can find. That's as far as their plans really get. Yeah, it's, I can't even comment on it. It's so crazy and zany and out there. But at least they have this. They have a date. So the raid is scheduled to take place on September 20th, 2019, from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Pacific time. So I wonder how many people are going to screw that up. They're going to show up in the afternoon. I mean, come on. People are going to figure out the time difference when they get out there in the desert. So I guess the idea behind this is, here's the logic. This is what I gather. I don't know if this is true, but this is kind of what I gather. The thought is that if you get a lot of people there, that nobody will get caught. That they'll be, you know, it's kind of like one of those when the kids like storm a supermarket and they all grab a bunch of stuff and they all run out in different directions kind of thing. And their thought process, somebody should be able to find the aliens that are hanging out somewhere, locked up somewhere, on the site. I mean, it sounds like a perfect plan. It sounds flawless. You know, I don't see anything that could go wrong with this at all. I mean, it just, it's genius. I don't know why we didn't think of this years ago, really. It's just crazy. But, I mean, how serious is this, really? But when I checked the Facebook event site around 6:30 tonight, haven't been on there since, there was 230,000 932 people interested in the event. So interested, including myself, although I have no plans to go. And I think a lot of the interested people probably are not going to go. But the important number here is 198,112 are stating that they are going. Well, they say that they're going. I mean, how many people already have their plane ticket? How many people are you know, have their exit strategy. Well, I'm thinking way too ahead here. The numbers have actually been steadily rising throughout the weekend, and some of the stories that were published last week are actually updating their numbers. So they're increasing it because it was right around 100,000 that said they were going just, I think, 2 days ago, and now on Sunday, and now it's almost 200,000 ideas, or 200,000 people that have the idea of going out there. But, I mean, is this really going to happen? And is this really a good idea? Well, I would say the answer to both of those questions is the same. No. I seriously doubt that more than 10 people, if that many, will actually show up. And even less than that 10 will try to make their way toward Area 51. And if anyone does, they probably won't get very far, especially when it's public knowledge that people are trying to get together and do this. There are a lot of people asking if this is real. But I doubt many are taking it seriously, as it really wasn't started to be serious. It was on a... the whole idea was people that are pretty much posting stupid stuff anyway. But some of the people on here are actually like coming up with some ideas and storm plans and exit strategies and infiltration strategies. And they're really truly wondering if this is real. And nobody's really organizing this. It is a joke. I don't think it's not serious whatsoever. It's just it's to get attention, and they've done it. You know, they've gotten on news. I still think it's going to grow a little bit. It's going to hit national news a little bit more than what it has. And that's when things are going to get interesting. And some of the stories that were put out about this point out, and I remember I covered this story, and it was pretty grim. Back in late January of this year, a man failed to stop at the gates at the Nevada National Security site and was subsequently chased for about 8 miles in his vehicle before being pulled over. The driver then got out of the car and approached officers while carrying a cylindrical object in his hand, and he then ignored commands to stop and was sadly shot and killed at the site. Now, the Nevada National Security site has very similar patrols and officers as the area of the Homi Airport in Groom Lake, which are affectionately known as Area 51. I mean, is this a good idea, and would it work? Let's be real here. Absolutely not. There's not that many guards there to stop 200,000 people. There's probably maybe 40 to 60. You only usually see a few, but I guarantee there's just probably a heavy amount, but they're spread out through a wide area. But the big problem is this area is pure desert, other than roads that lead their way in. Getting in on foot, I mean, forget it. It would take a long time to get through the dangerous terrain, including potentially radioactive areas, due to 739 nuclear tests that were done in parts of the area surrounding Groom Lake. There are closed-circuit television cameras, motion sensors, even rumored to be ground-sensing equipment that would be able to track people's location while they were on foot, not to mention the contracted help, which I mentioned, of the camouflage guards, known in popular culture as the Camo Dudes, and probably a lot of other stuff that we don't know about. I'm sure there's spike strips in the roads that would come up if you're trying to drive your vehicle through there. I got too close to the base. There could be mines or other booby traps, razor wire. Who knows what's up around that base that would make it pretty difficult. Other traps. You never know what could be in that area that could really turn deadly very quickly. Not to mention scorpions and just the heat and the dry air of the desert. You're not going to make it very far if you're trying to run through that, I guarantee you. But what would happen? Yeah, let's say you get onto the base. What are you going to do? A door's going to be locked with key cards or passwords getting entry, and even then, everybody would be alarmed on the base. There would be a lockdown. You're not going to get anywhere. What are you going to see? A bunch of closed, locked buildings. Same stuff you can see on the internet right now. And you're going to federal prison if you're not killed. Not a good idea. I mean, even if all the buildings were left unlocked, let's say there's a big party in the desert and everyone's out, they left everything unlocked. I mean, where would you go? How would you find anything. It's a very large base, and there's a lot of stuff, a lot of buildings, a lot of catacombs in those buildings, a lot of underground stuff as well, from what I understand. Not that I'd been there or anything, but lots of tunnels, lots of things to see. So, I also saw in the chat room people talking about Facebook. Yes, if this continues to build into a national story, I guarantee you Facebook is going to step in, and they're going to disband this group, or they're going to shut it down pretty quick, or they're going to suspend people's accounts. They're not going to tolerate this, especially if it's fake news, which they've tried to clamp down over the years with all this stuff. And, of course, anything that's going against the law, I mean, getting a bunch of people to storm a federally protected base, probably not a smart idea. And I'm sure Facebook is deliberating right now as to what to do about it. I'm sure they know about it. I'm sure it's shown up on different algorithms, and they're quite well aware. So we'll see. But we'll also see if it just kind of goes away on its own. You know, if Facebook makes a move, they might make it even more popular. Maybe they're just kind of trying to buy their time and wait. I mean, you still got a couple of months until these people say they're going to act. But how many people are really going to be that that excited about it in a couple of months? So people will probably just lose interest and move away from this. Either way, not something you should take seriously at this point. And yes, I did say that I was interested. Did say I was going. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not going to go. I'm just interested in seeing this debacle and see where it goes. But we'll see. You know, we'll see if how big of this joke continues to fly out there in the headlines. It's an interesting story nonetheless. I do have forgot the link for the first story, but I'll throw you guys a link out here. It wouldn't be hard to find anyway. Just Google Area 51 right now, and it's all over the place with the news. And it's just staininess. It's craziness what people are trying to do or what they think they're going to get away from. But this is was written by one little news outlet, and now it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Chuck Roswell. So last week was National UFO Day. And there, like I said, there's still stories pouring in about Roswell and other topics. They just had a big event in Roswell over the weekend. Their annual UFO festival took place, which we'll talk about a story that took place there in our next story. UFO Day really brought a lot of attention to Roswell and the topic of aliens and UFOs and them being related. So yesterday actually marked the 72nd anniversary of the famous headline from the Roswell Daily Record announcing that a UFO had been captured on a ranch in Roswell, New Mexico. Roswell has been a focus for many UFO believers and conspiracy theorists for many years. And people like the late Stanton Friedman brought Roswell not only out of the shadows of the past, but have also created it into a household name. And while there's always two sides to every story, especially to the Roswell story, a recent article from the Daily Star claims that the mystery is now solved. That's right. Roswell has been solved. And the headline itself reads, quote, Roswell, the truth, infamous 1947 UFO crash mystery finally solved, unquote. So what kind of groundbreaking evidence did they find? What did they discover? What kind of truth was found about this long sought after case that nobody knew about? Obviously, they found something that nobody knew. Well, not a whole lot. As you know, that titles can sometimes be deceiving. The article discusses much of what is already known about the 1947 incident in New Mexico, but also exposes the reality that was pieced together by files released by the government. Yes, files released by the government in the 1990s that verified the story that the crash object was in fact a top secret project of a balloon designed to detect Soviet nuclear tests called Project Mogul. The article also discusses how many of the people involved in the Roswell incident who made outrageous claims found their statements fall apart after they were caught lying or embellishing either their credentials or falsifying other information. Yes, most, actually nearly all of the people that were at the root of this Roswell kind of renovation in the 80s and 90s were all caught in one form or another, either lying about their service records, their work records, embellishing their stories, or their credentials in some form or fashion. The problem with all that was that these guys were getting paid for their statements. And anytime you involve money in something like this, you're going to get people coming out of the woodwork. They're going to have bad motives. And some of these people are still touring out there. They're still making money from Roswell, even though they've been exposed as frauds. They're still making money. That's crazy. And people pay for this stuff. That's what's even crazier. In reality, the government was fine with a UFO story since it supposedly hid what they were really up to, although many feel this is just a cover-up of a cover-up. For me, personally, I kind of find it hard to believe that if they wanted to bury Project Mogul, why would they bring so much attention to the incident by allowing a UFO story to be run on the front pages of newspapers? That, to me, is a little confusing. Granted, this was a different era, and a quick cover-up of a weather balloon soon followed. The UFO story was kind of swept to the side and kind of laughed at, which we're used to. Well, it's starting to fade away. It's starting to get a little bit more serious now. But the story was buried for a few more decades until UFO researchers came calling. The article also talks about some of the other thoughts that some have about Roswell. The famous thing is that it's a crashed UFO and there was alien bodies. And those alien bodies are at Area 51. We're taken there via Hangar 18 in Dayton, Ohio. But now they're out there, supposedly still. I don't know why they just hung out there. But some of the other hypotheses or conspiracy theories include that some think the incident was an experimental Nazi stealth bomber called a Horton HO-229. And this was not just a simple crash, but the craft was purportedly filled with genetically modified children that look like aliens created by the man known as the Angel of Death, Joseph Mengele, who his intention was to just absolutely frighten the American public by them seeing these alien bodies. That one's going a little bit out there. Now, other people have said it was a group of Jesuit priests who had an anti-gravity aircraft and also artificial hybrid humans. Okay. Or some think the incident was part of a firefight between the Greys from Zeta Reticuli and the U.S. Delta Force. Now, that one seems plausible. I see Chuck Norris in the middle of that thing. Others simply think the crash was of a reversed engineered or captured alien craft that pilots from Area 51 could not control. I don't know. I'd go for... Personally, I go for Project Mogul. The gentleman who came forward publicly a couple of months after the Project Mogul papers were released, he's actually taken lie detector tests, and his name is actually in some of these redacted statements that came out later, that he says, yes, that was my work. That was my balloon that I wasn't supposed to talk about. There it is. So there's truth. I mean, I know people don't want to hear it. They don't want to admit it that Roswell maybe wasn't an alien UFO aircraft. Maybe there wasn't bodies taken out of there. But some people, it's very hard to admit that this was a top secret balloon used to spy on other countries. And that was a big deal back then. We didn't want to get caught doing that kind of stuff. We didn't want to go to war over stuff like that. We're afraid of getting blown up just like anybody else at that time frame by nuclear weapons. But for some reason, that's just not scary or complicated enough for some people. But who knows? You know, just like the Patterson-Gimlin film, I think Roswell is going to live on. No matter what information ever comes out, people are still going to want to believe that aliens were behind all this. And speaking of alien cover-ups and conspiracy theories, another one thought long buried resurfaced over the weekend. And this one is, I'm going to say it. I'm going to go on record, and I'm going to say I'm very disappointed. Extremely disappointed that this came out. This came up, and this was actually talked about seriously in a very large forum in front of people who want to talk about UFOs and extraterrestrials. Donald Burleson, New Mexico State Director for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, again, the largest UFO research organization in the world. He was on hand at the 2019 UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico, giving a speech at the International UFO Museum and Research Center. And Burleson stated that he knows for a fact his information points to that Marilyn Monroe was murdered and that the government was behind it. And the reason behind it was definitely to stop her from leaking government secrets about extraterrestrials. Wow. I mean, I get it. Some people still believe about Marilyn Monroe's purportedly, you know, fooling around with certain Kennedys, and maybe somebody wanted to silence that. But maybe that's true. But even that is outlandish. And we'll talk about that here in a second from some research that I pulled up. But man, what? I'm not exactly sure why a MUFON state director would be speculating about an event that was put to rest in 1962 and then reinvestigated in 1982 because of conspiracy theories and was put to bed again. And especially one that doesn't really seem to have any kind of reflection on UFOs or aliens for that matter, despite the claim. Very loosely tied information. And I don't think this is the kind of thing that MUFON should be really getting their hands into. I don't think. I mean, personally, if I'm a PR person for MUFON, I'm going to make sure this doesn't hit the headlines. I mean, this is not healthy stuff for an organization that's trying to be taken seriously by the general public or by scientists for that matter, especially with what's going on with the government right now. I don't think that they would want to lose face or accuse the government of covering things up continuously. I think it's time to kind of meet in the aisles and see how maybe you can get information in a different way. But this is, to me, not a smart move. So for those that don't know, or maybe you're a little younger and you don't know who Marilyn Monroe was, she's actually, if you go to, I've seen Walmart and somewhere else I was at, a grocery store, a larger grocery store, they had, Time Magazine has a remembrance thing about, I don't know why, but Marilyn Monroe, there's actually a magazine about her life and times. You can read about her. She died on August 4th, 1962, after taking an overdose of barbiturates, basically a handful, a lot of barbiturates, about 20 to 40 pills, I believe. Now, Burleson made a lot of strange claims surrounding the death of Monroe, but he's not the first to make the same suggestions. Frank Capel published a pamphlet in 1964 titled The Strange Death of Marilyn Monroe, which stated that she was murdered. This was the first time this actually had been said in public, but it was due to a communist conspiracy, not about a UFO cover-up. Jack Clemens was the first police officer to arrive at the scene of Monroe's death and was a good friend of Capel and had helped create the pamphlet. And both men's claims ultimately were widely discredited. All the stuff that they came up with was torn to shreds by police evidence. And unfortunately, the same stuff that they threw out there is the same stuff that's being dragged around today that people believe that is actually not true. 1973, Norman Mailer published Marilyn, a biography. And in his book, Mailer repeated the claim that Monroe and Robert Kennedy had an affair and that she was killed either by the FBI or CIA. After this book was heavily criticized, he admitted in an interview with Mike Wallace that he made the claims to ensure he could sell his book and that he did not actually believe the conspiracy theories. So that's strike two. There was many more things that came out. A lot of people had claimed it was John Gotti, it was the mob, and all these other claims about Marilyn Monroe's death, but nothing was ever substantiated. And again, a lot of the claims that Burleson was making in his argument were already torn apart, that they were already discredited, already disproven by released records of Monroe's death, especially in the 80s when this was revisited, unfortunately, with all these claims that they actually reopened the case and investigated the information to see whether or not it was potentially true that somebody actually had killed her. But again, a lot of the statements were wrong. People were claiming things that were not true. And all this stuff added up, unfortunately, back to the sad truth that Marilyn Monroe took her own life. I mean, again, why can we not just admit the sad truth sometimes? Sometimes the truth is way worse than any conspiracy theory could actually be. And, you know, Marilyn Monroe was a huge sex figure of her time. She had, unfortunately, a very shady history that people were not aware of at the time. She had a history of drug abuse. She'd actually attempted suicide. She was actually admitted into a mental hospital for a while. She was called crazy by her movie studio. She was pretty much kicked off of her last film because they said she was crazy. She was insane. She was nuts. And I don't think that does too much good for somebody's personality or their personal beliefs about themselves. And really and truly, she was 36. A lot of people say she was way too young. But despite being 36, her career was pretty much over at that point due to all her personal issues. Again, she was kicked off her last film and struggling to get interviews with anybody at that point in her life. And all her other personal things were just falling apart. You know, a lot of stuff had happened a few months before her death, but really and truly, her life was crumbling. And she'd actually stated a number of times to her physician or psychologist and to other people that she was thinking about taking her own life. So, you know, we know that nowadays, that if people talk about it, it's something that we need to intervene with, not ignore or try to keep from the public. But unfortunately, this is, again, a different era. And unfortunately, you know, everything points to that she took a handful of pills and unfortunately killed herself. And again, for a MUFON state director to claim that the government killed Marilyn Monroe, I think is completely out of line for this. And just not something I think MUFON should really be putting their hands into, especially with some of their ongoing internal issues that have been going on for a while with some of the statements that have made by other state directors and losing membership and losing leadership and all these other things. But again, that's part of the problem of a larger organization. I don't think other people know what other people are doing out there or their belief systems and what other pieces of leadership are doing. But I don't think this is a proud moment for MUFON. I think it's, and I'm not one to really talk about conspiracy theories, because they're generally born out of ideas that are not really factual. It's just people kind of dream things up. And, you know, we've heard a lot of this lately in the last 10, 15, 20 years about people claiming that big disasters never even happened or people were hired as actors. And to me, that's ludicrous to make those assumptions and about people and people that have lost loved ones and then to tell them that their loved ones weren't even real. I mean, this is along those same lines, and it's just craziness that we have to talk about these things. But normally I sidestep conspiracy theories, but figuring that this had something to do with MUFON, I really kind of felt compelled to kind of bring this out and talk about it a little bit in this arena. But that will do it for this week, and that's going to do it for 300s. Next week is episode 400. That's insane. Finally making it to another milestone. I mean, it's just another show. But it is a milestone. I'm excited for that. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Don't let your brains fall out. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.